Celebrate over 100 years of steak perfection with Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide during their anniversary sale. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at omahasteaks.com today. They're America's original butcher, and only Omaha Steaks delivers a full lineup of extra-age steaks so tender, they're USDA certified tender. Their customer favorite filet mignon has even been elevated to USDA certified very tender. And that attention to quality doesn't just stop with steaks. We're talking beefy burgers, air-chilled chicken, premium pork, and so much more. And every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Shop now to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the anniversary sale at omahasteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code CERTIFIED. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union Podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the meaty voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good afternoon, Matt. This is a very unusual time for us.
It is a very unusual time. It's normally the crack of dawn, but proceedings have been delayed today, so we are at around 2:30 on Monday afternoon.
True, but it is a Monday, which is going to become a regular thing, we hope.
I'd like to think so. Barring a very exciting Monday night football, I would imagine that, yes, this will be the go-to moving forward, which is a good thing. A good thing.
I think so. And yes, meaty, I've got a new habit that I wanted to share.
Go on then.
Steak. I really, really like steak. And I've had it every night, near enough, for the last 4 weeks on its own.
It's just going to be one of those things where it's almost like you're the first person to ever have steak ever in the world. So now you're going to talk about it.
I'll talk about it. Yeah. And I'll be that guy that when someone says a steak and they only get it like medium or medium well, I'll kind of like roll my eyes like, you know, as if I'm like some steak connoisseur now, because I'm really getting to know the different types of steak, because there is a place nearby that delivers. I don't cook it, by the way, of course. So you wouldn't like this at all, because it comes in a box, which straight away, I know you're going to be shaking your head, but it's so good. So good. So I know all the different types of steak, and that is now my go-to. Until I get bored of it, every single night, just steak, nothing else, bit of salt. Love a little bit of salt with it. Maybe a bit of pesto from time to time. That's quite good. But that is essentially my go-to now.
Pesto on a steak?
Is it? It might not be pesto. It's green, though. It comes with it. Maybe it's mint.
Okay. Quick quiz, then, before we move on to the actual podcast. What do you know about steak? What types of steak do you know?
Oh, well, it's whether you go for like a sirloin. I mean, obviously, fillet is the one that I tend to go to. If you can get the Wagyu, I mean, that's top notch. But that is quite expensive. And here in Dubai, they seem to put a real premium on that. So it just depends kind of how I'm feeling on the day. If I feel like I've had a good day and I deserve it, then I go all out. But more often than not, it will just be the sirloin or maybe a fillet if I feel like I've, you know, maybe gone that step above.
Okay, quite basic steak knowledge then, to be fair. How do you have it? How do you have it prepared for you?
Medium rare. Okay. Of course.
Yeah, I can endorse that. And lastly, the reason. What is the reason for this, I'm going to call fad for Richard Lee, which will last probably about a month more and then it'll be the next thing.
Yeah, you know me well. You know me very well. I think I mentioned it last week. I'm on a big weight loss. I realized that I was obese, really. Like, I wasn't, in that, you know, you can kind of kid yourself for a long time. But the fact that I put on, since the day I retired, 30 kilos. 30 kilos. And they just crept up on me, you know, over a period of 10 years. Only 3 kilos a month, you know. So when you look at it that way, that's not really that bad, is it? It's like a quarter of a kilo a month. Is that right? I'm working this. 3 kilos a year, sorry. So, but yeah, it's crept up. And I've just had that moment where I'm like, come on, get yourself in shape. And now the window is closed. I can dedicate a bit more time to the gym. I can sort my diet out. And it's starting to come up really hard when you get old, though. Really, really hard.
On with the show.
Yeah, probably best we do it.
Commentary corner.
Well, there it is, that jingle. The first time we've heard the jingle this season. We don't like to play the jingle too often now on the podcast. However, we could simply not ignore it this weekend because Roy Keane went into overdrive yet again. He's back. So Brighton 2, Forest 2, Man City 2, Arsenal 2. 2-2-2 draws at the weekend. And we will start with the Brighton-Nottingham Forest game first, where Matt Sells conceded a free kick from Danny Welbeck. And Roy Keane reckoned that Sells should be fined a week's wages for being beaten on that side, which we'll say was his far post for that free kick. What do you think?
I mean, all right, ridiculous comment. I'm going to go in a lot stronger on the Edison one for a start because, look, ridiculous comment, clickbait, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. It was, you know, to get that little meme that's going to be going around and find a week's wages and all that, just absolute nonsense. Look, the bit that I would agree with is I think Sells will be disappointed with it. It's that classic one where just as it's about to be taken, he's tried to read it, taken a step. Of course, he can't see overly well because you've got the wall, you've got the charger, you've got a few men blocking his sight, so he won't see it till very late. However, and I know goalkeeping's changing all the time, but this is one thing I don't think I'll change on, is that ideally you don't get beaten on your side unless it is that one that is whipped up high down into the top corner. Then maybe, even if you do everything right, that might beat you. But I think other than that, I think something like this, if he'd have held his position until the moment it was taken, step to his left, explode, I think he saves this quite comfortably. So I actually don't disagree with the fact that he gave a little bit of criticism on this, but it's just the way in which he does it. I mean, find a week's wages. It's just nonsense. Is that the same when someone misses an open goal or a midfielder misplaces a 3-yard pass? Like, you know, and even then there was a comment, it might have been in the other game, I lose track now. It was Welbeck, it was in this game, where then, again, people he knows, he's obviously a little bit kinder to. So it's just, again, just a silly comment to make. He wouldn't make it about outfield players, but it is this thing that we spoke about way too often where goalkeepers are seen differently and there are examples where they can speak about goalkeepers in that way.
Okay, on to the second game. You said you were going to go harder on the Edison analysis. So he had quite a lot to say about the header scored by Gabriel and the corners floated in quick succession by Arsenal on Edison. I'm going to quickly read out the comments that Roy Keane made. This is from after the game when he was having the discussion in the panel with Theo Walcott, with Michael Richards, with Paul Merson. So he said, I think the goalkeeper's got to do more. I think the goalkeeper's got to dominate that area. Why isn't he knocking people over? He had a warning 3 or 4 minutes earlier. So the goalkeeper, you always see goalkeepers chatting with the goalkeeper. That's your domain. That's your area. So if someone comes into your area, be ready. I've always said, come with violence. Go and hit people. Theo Walcott then said, so you're saying to your goalkeeper to take a different sort of starting position. Be on your toes, Roy Keane said. Look at people saying, if you come anywhere near me, I'm taking the ball and I'm taking you with me. At least have a little bit of hesitation, but it happened twice. Instead of coming back and going, I'm ready, he's not even bouncing. He doesn't look aggressive. So if people are coming near him, he should be grabbing them, not stamping on their toes, but going, do you want to come near me? I tell you, let's see who wins this battle. Remember, he can use his arms. Come and punch it. I'm not saying it's easy because he was then questioned that it wasn't so easy in this situation, but they've got to do something about it, he said. He's a top-class goalkeeper. We're talking about shot stoppers. It's commanding your area. Get people where they're supposed to be. And as I said, it's just a case of looking at somebody. I know these lads have a run on you, but you can use your arms. Come and punch it. Take the guy's head off if you have to.
Right, I mean, I could go through that piece by piece, like the thing he said. I mean, how many generic, useless comments have been made in that? Because he wouldn't shut up, would he? He just kept on talking and just saying, like, the most basic, no detail. It was tough to listen to. Really, really tough to listen to. Because the point of this is, firstly, it's a foul. That's the first point. Secondly, is actually, I wished in that moment they'd have actually done a demonstration of the students. Said, okay, Roy, tell you what, Roy, you expert on goalkeeping, you, and again, all you other outfielders that are sat on the panel that have no way of actually coming back at him and saying something with any sense or any detail whatsoever behind it. Tell it, Roy, stand up, right? Like, put your back to me. I'm now going to stand here, try and move backwards and see how far you go. Because you can't. You can't. If someone comes and sets themselves behind you, and they did it twice, like you say, it was very well orchestrated. It's a foul, of course, in my opinion, because they got no intention of playing the ball. There's two players blocking off the goalkeeper, and they're delivering the ball to the far post. So it's brilliant because they know that it's very rarely given as a foul, but it is a foul. It's obstruction. There's no one that's actually attempting to win the ball out of those two players. But I bet if they'd have done that to Roy Keane in the studio there, said, go on then, Roy, show me some violence. Show me what you're going to do now. You've got 1 second from that ball going from the corner flag to go into the far post. Show me how you're going to catch the ball. Because there is no physical way you can catch the ball, hence it being a foul. So, but again, it's just you're watching this, and as it's going on and on, he's just saying, you know, these basic comments after basic comments with no detail and just the usual sort of thing we hear, dominate your six-yard box. Okay, that's a lovely comment, but in this situation, that isn't applicable. Show some violence. What does that even mean? Like, what are you meant to do in that moment when you're being blocked off? I believe Edison got booked after this, right? Because he obviously made the point, I think, to the referee and what have you. Because, again, it's a foul. But it's just the lack of education, the lack of insight, and listening to him say that. And again, I'm sure a lot of it, I'm convinced it must be Sky saying to him, just say some ridiculous stuff, because it's what it gets us talking, you know, and it obviously gets fans talking and creates debate, I guess. But I truly hope he doesn't actually mean a lot of what he's saying, or whether it is just severe lack of information, lack of education.
Yeah, there wasn't really any opposition to him. To be fair, during the game, Gary Neville concurred with what Roy Keane said after the game. Jamie Carragher didn't think Edison was to blame. So it was interesting to hear the two of those kind of go back and forth. Theo Walcott was somewhere in the middle. Paul Merson felt the whole setup wasn't right on the part of City. I thought it was interesting when you said he didn't really have any comeback. The only thing that Theo Walcott did say was, you know, we've been down there. We've been on the side of the pitch. They're big guys, those goalkeepers. They're big guys. Thanks, Theo. Yep, goalkeepers are big guys. Thanks for that. But I think the key thing for me with all of this in what Roy Keane was saying was that, and this is what we always refer to, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So next week, say a goalkeeper does come out with violence, and I'll go back, I think it was a couple of seasons ago, Robert Sanchez at Brighton, when he came out for that 50-50 ball, and I think it might have been Sadio Mane. It was definitely against Liverpool, but he's absolutely cleaned Mane out. And all the pundits were saying how disgraceful it was. Goalkeepers, they're alluring to themselves. They can get away with what they want to get away with. That's such dangerous play. So next week, if a goalkeeper does come out with violence and take the guy's head off, if he has to, as per Roy Keane, Roy Keane will be the first player saying, that's outrageous. Mm. He could kill the person. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
You're bang on. It's just that's where it's just a ridiculous comment to make. Like, it sounds good. Come with violence. Sounds great until, as you say, you mistime one and take someone out and concussion and whatever else that goes on, and suddenly you're the villain and you're bang on. It's one, and that's where I just go back. Each situation is different. This one, yeah, it happened twice and they did it brilliantly, and at the same time, it is a foul. I'll keep saying that. But it's just that, like, okay, Roy, you say come with all lots of lovely words that don't mean anything. Explain to me how he catches that ball. From that position, his positioning's fine. He's a couple of yards off his line. He's centre of the goal, in-swinging ball. Everything's fine. Explain to me how you get round two people that have stood behind you. You've got no momentum. So how do you, what do you do? Elbow them? Stand on their feet? Like, what do you actually mean by that? Because again, if you're doing that, going back to what you said, damned if you do, damned if you don't, treads on someone's foot and breaks their toe, breaks their metatarsal. Is that what you're saying? Is that the way then to build, you know, buy that extra second to go and collect the ball? There is nothing he could have done. And that's, yeah, again, I hate watching stuff like this because we just need somebody on the panel that can actually call him out and just, or just dig into it and say, great, Roy, you've made a point there, but now explain it. Don't just say all these words that we've heard so many times, dominate six-yard box, clean people out, come with violence, you know, go all the way, etc. All these things we hear, they don't mean anything. So yeah, really, really difficult to listen to.
Just a couple of other points from that game I wanted to bring up with you before we move on. The first of those being concentration. Now, nothing new for a goalkeeper, of course, concentration. You have to be focused for the 90 plus minutes every time you play a game, and that could be mentally draining. But it just felt like the concentration required from David Raya, particularly in the second half of that contest yesterday, was off the charts, especially when it seemed like Mikel Arteta at halftime said to his troops, listen, we are putting 10 men behind the ball and letting City come onto us. For 45 plus minutes in that second half, Arsenal were under siege, and the concentration from David Raya, you could see it because City were camped outside that 18-yard box, playing left, playing right, potentially shots coming, potentially deflections coming. It's no surprise that the goal did come from a deflection, a ricochet, but you could see Raya just crouched, just poised, sidestep here, sidestep there, just peering, trying to keep his eyes on the ball at all times. He must have come off the pitch at the end of that game absolutely exhausted.
Do you know, the only example I can probably give that, again, and I'm not going to try and claim this is anywhere near this size of game, but I always remember playing away at Manchester United. It was Man United when they were in their pomp, Ronaldo, Rooney, etc. And we lost 4-0 on the night. But I remember that second half, and that was, for me, exactly what you said. It was attack v defence. You know, you do it in training, but this was 45 minutes non-stop. And I remember after that, and I came off with such a bad headache just for the fact that you are constantly on it. You know, there's no time where, and goalkeepers would appreciate this, where the ball's up the other end, you've got a corner, there's injuries, there's whatever, and you can switch off for a split second or just take a breather. It just felt constant. And look, it's really pleasing to watch David Raya doing what he's doing because, and again, without saying that we are the oracle of goalkeeping, but we did call it last season, like how much different it would be when Ramsdale goes, good for both, which is proven to be the case, because now there is the focus on David Raya, the goalkeeper, not David Raya or Aaron Ramsdale. It's no, David Raya's a goalkeeper, and now let's judge him on his performances. And he's been exceptional this season, and again, in a big game, exceptional again. And as you say, you're going in 2-1 up at half time, and obviously really frustrating for them to concede right at the end. But I think if someone had said to him at half time, you've got 10 men against Man City going into the second half, you'd have taken a point all day, and so, so close to getting 3 points. And again, David Raya, a big part of that.
And the last point is, again, something that happens at games throughout the world every single week. You see it at pretty much every game you go to, in fact, now. Goalkeepers who go down with, in inverted commas, injury. Now, the reason we're bringing it up is because when it happens on such a high-profile level, as it did yesterday, it's worth talking about, because I feel like this is the one part of a goalkeeper's game, and a lot goes against goalkeepers and has gone against goalkeepers for many a year now. But this is the one part of a goalkeeper's game that remains upheld as sacrosanct, and I absolutely love it, because there is nothing that a referee can do, right? There's nothing you can do. If a goalkeeper goes down, you've just got to take it as it is.
Yeah. Well, it is one, and you're seeing it more and more. And, you know, it used to be that a goalkeeper goes down, 9 times out of 10, they're coming off, they're getting subbed. Whereas now you see it happen, and I can't remember the last time I've seen a goalkeeper go down and actually thought, okay, they're in serious trouble here. You know, you just kind of know what's coming. I say that, and actually, of course, a horrific injury to Ter Stegen yesterday. Obviously, we wish him well, because that, yeah, really did look horrendous. But certainly when you're watching a lot of these games and there's 20 minutes to go, 15 minutes to go, and suddenly the goalkeeper goes down and someone comes and starts stretching his hamstring or doing something, you know exactly what's going on. And it is a little loophole that goalkeepers are getting stick for it. Of course, it is a direction from the manager. We need to buy a bit of time. We need to reorganize, want a little bit of a break, a little bit of a breather in a game like this. And as you say, it's the one player that doesn't have to come off the pitch. They have to stop the game. So it is being used more and more. The fact that it's being used more and more makes me wonder whether there is some form of rule change at some point, because it's not just, you know, the likes of David Raya or some of these Premier League teams. This is happening up and down the leagues. So my gut says at some point this gets addressed, which is a shame if it does, because this is one of the key time-wasting tactics, but also tactic, certainly when you're under the cosh and you need to change momentum, we're seeing it more and more.
Yeah, it's glorious. And it's not cheating either, is it? Because as things stand, it's not against the law. You're not breaking any rules.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely not at the moment. That's the thing. It's, and you know, you see it with any rule change, actually, when you think about it. Like the one I always remember was when suddenly goal kicks, you could play it inside the area. And it was amazing within days, like teams were thinking of how they could take advantage of a certain rule. And, you know, and obviously you're now seeing the way in which teams are playing out from that. This is different. But at the same time, it's, well, look, this is what it is. You're not breaking the rule. You know, we are under the cosh and we cannot get ourselves out and the players are tired and what have you. Then it is a tactic that can be used and is being used. Again, people have their opinions on it, right or wrong. But ultimately, everyone's out there to win. And if this is a way in which it can help you gain that advantage, or, yeah, if you are really struggling in a game, then I fully understand why people are using it.
good stuff. Okay, we'll rattle through the rest of the action from the Premier League, starting at Selhurst Park, where it was Crystal Palace 0, Manchester United 0. A lovely double save from Andre Onana. Eddie Nketiah and Ismaïla Sarr denied there. But Dean Henderson, man of the match. Big saves from Alejandro Garnacho and Matis de Ligt. Plus, what we, I guess you could say, is a standard Dean Henderson celebration when touching across wide in that first half too. He did admit afterwards as well that one of his saves was so dramatic.
Yeah, it was. But do you know what? And I think this was partly, obviously, as part of the interview, and I quite enjoyed the interview, the fact that, you know, he had a smile and what have you. But it's such a really good save. You know, it's one that, can he hold it? Probably not. So what is the goal of that particular situation? It is to try and get it into a very good area. Now, what technique you use, everyone uses something very different. He's gone top hand, really nice parry, and he's kind of floated in the air. So of course it looks a certain way, but actually in terms of his end result, I thought he executed it very, very well. And the fact that he could smile about it and make a bit of a joke about it, I quite enjoyed that. But yeah, some top stuff from Dean Henderson. The fingertip in particular, the reason I enjoyed this and he had the little celebration was there were two actions in one here. The first is that he's had the awareness that there's a striker there. So effectively it starts as a dive across goal as a spread to then stop the incoming attacker. But then he soon realizes the attacker's not getting there. It's going to sneak in the far corner and he's able to quickly shift and get the fingertips around the post. So I just thought it was really, really clever goalkeeping. I'll finish with the one that he made down to his left-hand side because I thought this was an excellent save. And the camera angle's perfect for it as well. If you freeze it the moment the attacking player takes a shot, his positioning is bang on. There's so many goalkeepers that will get sucked towards their near, overcover the near. But you look, he's so well positioned, has quite a wide stance. But the speed at which he gets down to his left, because it's going right in the corner. I think it was Garnacho, wasn't it? I don't think there's anything more he can do. He's putting this right in the corner. But Dean Henderson's positioning and then the ability to shift his weight to his left, full stretch, fingertips around the post. Top save. And certainly a mention for Andre Onana as well, because it's a brilliant double save. The first one, tough to get down to his left. Isn't able to parry it wide. It comes back out slightly, but it's just the speed off the floor. And goalkeepers do this day in, day out. You know, that double save or that work in training where it's quick off the floor. But he almost manages to spring while on the floor, like manages to get that little bit of height. And in the end, it is fingertips. You know, if he doesn't get that extra little bit of leap that he gets off the floor, he doesn't save this. But again, that's all that power work that he'll do in training. And he manages just to get up and cover the goal just enough to get fingertips around the post. Top save.
Tottenham 3, Brentford 1, and Guglielmo Vicario, excellent late save from him from a Kevin Schade header. But a couple of moments in this one which I don't think will help the narrative that seems to be spreading when it comes to Vicario at the moment. We had a message from Mackenzie Chapman, current Blackpool goalkeeper, who did point out, I think it was an Instagram story post from Vicario, around about the time that Edison was receiving those crosses yesterday. It was just a simple shrug of the shoulders emoji, which you might think was a bit of lair from Vicario, as if to say, yeah, you know, it doesn't just happen to me and perhaps we can switch the narrative now. But yes, there were a couple of moments in this one, notably what appeared to be a blatant handball outside of his area.
Yeah, this certainly was a handball. Do you know what? Taking the positive, because this was, again, another all-action performance from Vicario. The bit that I loved about this was the positivity, the fact that he's come 17 yards to catch the cross. The issue is the mishandle. Now, I do wonder whether he thought, when he's coming towards, whether he did worry that he was at the edge of the box and that caused a mishandle, potentially. But then once he's done that, it's almost a little bit of a panic, because I think the first time he hits the ball with his hand, it's fine. He's just inside the area, but he realizes it's still slightly behind him. And of course, the next one, that's the one that is the handball, and yeah, could have been much, much worse for him. And then, of course, when he gets caught in possession, you could just see it's that horrible. I couldn't think of anything worse. The fact that it's on his weak foot, you know, I imagine kind of getting a ball back in my six-yard box, first touch across goal, and it'd be on my right foot, my weaker foot, you know, to then try and clear it or find a pass, and you've got three attacking players near you. And again, we see this so often where I think, I get it. I get where teams are playing and how they're playing. But I do think situations like that, it's difficult if your weaker foot isn't strong enough to clear it 30, 40 yards. And you kind of got the sense in this situation it wasn't. He tried to play out, got caught, really should have ended up in a goal. I was thankful for him that it didn't. And then, as you say, the fact that, and we see this from Vicario, and this is a real positive towards him and a real compliment, it doesn't seem to affect him, because the save that he made made to his right hand side, I thought was excellent. Really good footwork, got himself back on the line, quick step to his right, very powerful, full stretch to get the palm and parry it into a good area. So yeah, a bit of a mixed bag in terms of that. But again, I go back to that where teams are playing out, and we're talking about it every week at the moment, where there just always seems to be a situation a goalkeeper's put in that is just a nightmare situation. And there's very few ways you can get out of some of these situations, certainly if you're not two-footed, which of course most goalkeepers aren't.
And finally, we'd just like to get your thoughts on Alphonse Areola for the Chelsea opener scored by Nicholas Jackson. That was questioned on commentary. West Ham lost the game 3-0. Kepa Arrizabalaga for both of the Luis Diaz goals in Bournemouth's 3-0 defeat at Liverpool. Quivín Kelleher in for his first start of the season in that one. Very good performance from him, as we've come to expect from the Liverpool number two. And Nick Pope for Emile Smith-Rowe's goal as Fulham beat Newcastle. Also, just like Vicario, a good save late on from Alex Iwobi in that one.
Yeah, well, I think with Areola, it concerns me if that's getting criticism, because it is effectively a one-on-one, and it's the one place he can score. Credit to the striker, because it is the one small gap between the legs that he's found, and it's ended up in the back of the net. Now, look, is it savable? If he gets the barrier bang on in that moment, then yeah, it will hit his legs and go out. But it's such a small gap, and he's just managed to thread it through. So certainly, I would never look at this and say it's an error. And at the same time, I'm sure Areola will look at it and say, right, at point of impact, could I have just had a slightly different shape in that particular moment? But it did frustrate me that he did seem to get quite a lot of criticism for that, which seems harsh when it's a one-on-one. And that is ordinarily the place where you are most susceptible, you know, through the legs. If you can't spread in time or get yourself into the position that you need to get in. You mentioned Kelleher there, a big mention for him as well. I thought a couple of excellent saves in this one. The save at the near post, really, really good. Again, positioning's bang on, and this is fired into the top corner. But for me, it was just the fact that he has quite an upright stance, and I think this is that one where, probably use myself as an example, where I was just set quite low, and this would have beaten me, because the speed at which this is fired into the top corner, even though it's near post, which again, had this had gone in, it'd have been interesting if people had said anything, but this is a really tough save, smashed in at the near post, top corner, and the speed at which he got up, nice set, nice stance, big save to his right-hand side, great reactions with the one on the line as well, because again, ball had cannoned off the bar, come back in towards goal, so quick to get down, and have the awareness, not only to keep it out the goal, but to get a really big parry away. And yeah, Kepa, similarly with the Areola one, I certainly wouldn't on the second one. At the point of impact, he actually looks like he's in a reasonably good position, but it is again one of them where it just creeps through the legs. 9 times out of 10, this hits his legs, goes out, and it's being classed as a good save. I think there's always going to be moments where it does go through the legs, so I certainly wouldn't look at that one. I think it is just the first one where it's a tricky one, and I say this because of the fact that when the ball's played straight, and goalkeepers will appreciate this, like depth perception can be so difficult. You know, when it's played at a bit more of an angle, you might be able to see it more, but when it's played straight down your throat and you're wondering, is this coming all the way through? So he's obviously come out to try and be positive, proactive. And of course, the moment the player gets in front of you and controls it and takes it wide of you, then you are in serious trouble. So one that he'll look at and wish he could have done a little bit better on. And at the same time, one that I know from personal experience is so tough to deal with. And then lastly, Nick Pope. Do you know, the only point that I'll make on this, because it's very, very rare that we see a Nick Pope error, but that's two now recently to his left-hand side. So I don't know if this, and again, it's just very uncharacteristic, like the way he went down didn't look overly comfortable. So I don't know if it's necessarily a technical error, whether there's something psychological there, because yeah, very, very unlike him. Just looked to get down in installments a little bit, where normally this is the one where he would just drop really sharp to his left-hand side and no doubt hold it ordinarily. But he did have the one a few weeks ago. So again, he's been injured for a long period of time, fully fit now, of course, and did a full pre-season. So hopefully these types of things, they are just a rarity, and we'll see the best of Nick Pope, because some of what he's done this season already has been very much where he was before the injury. So I'm sure that he'll soon get back to that. But yeah, a rare moment for Nick Pope.
It is the EFL overview, with Luton winning at home to Sheffield Wednesday in the Championship, and Thomas Kaminski with a first half save from Josh Windass, similar to many others throughout the EFL this weekend. So many of these close range point blankers from crosses that we saw. Dan Backman with one in the opening minutes from Sam Sargent in Watford's defeat to Norwich. Both Christy Pym and Jed Steer late on to help Mansfield and Peterborough to 3 points respectively in League One. And Jamie Jones repeating the antics in League Two, only to see his Salford side fall at home. home to Walsall, but back to Backman, who, although making that early save, did look troubled as Callum Doyle's opener slipped through his hands. He did have to come off moments later for Jonathan Bond. Jacob Zetterstrom on the losing side for Derby at Sheffield United, but again, building his credit with another solid performance for the Rams. Raksaki, Hamer and Burrows all denied by the Swede in that one. And a tale of two penalties, Stoke's Victor Johansson saving Casey Palmer's spot kick, but seeing the rebound nodded in by the whole man in a win for the Tigers. And Jack Anik, very busy for Cardiff and very impressive throughout, you have to say, also on the losing side against Leeds, but denying Pascal Strout from 12 yards, always worth a mention.
Yeah, we'll start with Jacob Zetterstrom. You mentioned again a couple of top saves in this one. The second one actually impressive for the fact that it was actually initially him giving the ball away. And talk about this a lot where, you know, again, from personal experience, where you know you've made an error in the build-up, to then refocus, reassess and make the right action the next time could be very difficult. But I thought he made a top save after giving the ball away, got himself back up to his left-hand side. So powerful. I mean, he's a big guy, but the way in which he was able to shift his weight, get up to the top left-hand corner, very, very good. Jack Anik, very good again for Cardiff. I mean, they've really struggled. Obviously, he scored one goal so far, but good penalty save. Another solid performance from him. You mentioned Johansson, felt for him because this was an excellent penalty save. And it's that one, if anything, where you dive too far and it kind of hits your hand and comes back the way you went. And there's nothing more frustrating when it then goes to the penalty taker for them just to put into an empty net. Dan Backman, excellent save early on. Was a strange one with a goal. And you wonder whether, you mentioned he came off with an injury, whether that impacted him in some way, because we don't see this from him that often, but just didn't really seem to take off to his left-hand side. And I believe it was something to do with his thigh, I think, in terms of the injury. So whether that, I can only put two and two together, that when you're trying to explode and if you have got an issue in the leg, whether he was able to get that power to really take off, but certainly one that he'll be a little bit frustrated by. And you mentioned Thomas Kaminski and lots of saves that we saw like this at the weekend. Very, very good. And it's that one, ball comes across, you know you can't come for the cross. It's then getting yourself set and making yourself as big as you can, because it's going to be point blank. Did this, top save. And in the end, it was very, very important.
Into League One, where Nathan Baxter showed lovely technique to half-volley Amadou Mbengue's header over the bar in the first half of Bolton's battering of Reading. Josh Griffiths with a double stop in the first half and excellent reactions in the second to push a Ricky J. Jones header wide. However, Bristol Rovers falling to a third successive defeat with the opener from Kwame Poku looking just a little suspect. Quite the game at the John Smith Stadium as Northampton ran out surprise 3-1 victors. Lee Burge with a lovely ball to create the second for Cameron McGeehan, and then making a crucial penalty save from Josh Caroma moments after Huddersfield had reduced the deficit late on. But the big talking point in this one was the own goal scored by Michael Hellick. So this was one where you shouldn't laugh, but you kind of can't help but laugh, especially when it's through no fault of Lee Nichols whatsoever. And celebration of the weekend goes to Harry Tyra this week, on loan at Blackpool from Everton. 2-0 up at Charlton, he made an excellent flying save from Lloyd Jones, only to then fumble a header which set up a nervy few minutes for the away side. You suspect the crowd might have let him know about that, because of the final whistle, seconds after making another save from a free kick, he certainly let them know about his delight at taking all 3 points. He was very pent up, I think you could say.
Yeah, I don't think Harry Tyra will be joining Charlton anytime soon. But no, look, really happy for him. Obviously, good loan move for him, and that's a couple of games now. Massive win, this one for them, and great place to play, of course, Charlton. But, you know, big atmosphere there to get a win like that and to make a save. And again, how often does this happen? You know, it's so rare that you make a save in the dying seconds and then the final whistle goes. So you could certainly see his delight, and even more so where I'm sure the goal would be one that he'd be a little bit frustrated by. A tricky one, because he had a striker a couple of yards from him, and you can tell he was in two minds, wasn't really able to parry effectively or hold, and in the end, of course, ended up in a goal. But a couple of top saves in this one. Ultimately, they get the win. We know what it's like as a goalkeeper when you win. A lot of the times, the odd moment that you have can get quickly forgotten. So very pleased for him. Yeah, big well done to Lee Burge. I know he came off, I think it was last week, so I did wonder whether he'd even start in this game. But top performance from him. Big penalty save, important penalty save. You mentioned the own goal. I've watched this a few times and just so bizarre. Really, really bizarre, where effectively it's like the dream for an opposition, isn't it? Where you're setting up against a goal kick or whatever it might be, and three passes later, you haven't even touched the ball and it's ended up in the back of the net. But certainly no fault at all on Lee Nichols. I felt for him a bit, actually, because it is that one as it's played behind him. You're left with a bit of a decision as to what to do. Like, do you try and dive after it? Do you try and slide? And in the end, the fact that he's facing his own goal, he just wasn't able to do anything. And you mentioned Josh Griffiths there. A couple of top things in this one. The double save in particular, point blank save. Felt for him on the goal. I think it's just that one, probably similar but different to the Kepa one we spoke about, where ball comes over, you think, am I going to get the original ball? The moment you realise you're not, you're then caught in, what's our favourite phrase, no man's land. You're then caught in that place where it's like, okay, how do I make the most of this situation or the best of this situation? Unfortunately for him, it's an excellent finish, good touch, looped over him, and very little he could do at that point. It's just so difficult when you see that initial ball and think, I can come for this, and realise halfway through that you can't. And then, of course, your positioning's never going to be where you want it to be.
And finally, in League Two, you said it's nice when the last touch of a game is a save made by a goalkeeper, and that is exactly what happened at Stadium NK with Tom McGill's tipping over Jay McGrath's late header to earn the home side a point against Doncaster. Philip Marshall very much settled into life on loan at Crewe, a third successive shutout and a 3-0 win over Harrogate, and two lovely late saves from Warren Burrell and Stephen Duke McKenna to ensure he entered the club this week. Sadly, it's one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper, keeper.
Ryan Boot, who has been excellent for Chesterfield so far this season, just ever so slightly misjudging the flight of the ball, although it did appear to pick up on the turf, to be fair. That said, it allowed Arkell Jude Boyd to steal him for Cheltenham. It ended one apiece. And can you believe, Richard, that he's done it again? Tommy Simkin, with a late claim in Walsall's win at Salford, cue a knee slide for the second week in succession. Is he going to make a habit of this?
I hope he does, because he really nails the knee slide. He's got it to a T. I know you're not the biggest fan of knee slides. They can end in injury. You've got to be very careful. You've got to nail it, which he very much does. And I quite like that, the way in which he does it while he's holding the ball quite high in his chest. I think this could become a bit of a thing of his, something that he's known for, I think. But just to mention Ryan Boot there, again, I know I say this all too often, but you know, I feel for goalkeepers in that we've been there, where ball comes through, and you can see he's just waiting for it to be at a perfect height so he can volley it clear. And it's that split second where he's just waiting for it to come before it's ready to strike. And of course, the player gets just ahead of him and is able to then slide it into the empty net. So one that he'll be no doubt very disappointed with. At the same time, we feel for you. We've all been there. It's a horrible moment. Either that, you try and meet it maybe slightly earlier, but of course it never gets to a decent height, so you can't really get the clearance on it. It's a really tough situation, but one that no doubt he'll be a bit frustrated by. Clean Sheet Club.
So for the second week in succession, Richard, you are passing the baton. Again, this isn't going to become a thing, right? This is not going to be a regular moving forward, but you want to pass the baton once more.
Look, Matthew, you should take this as a compliment. You are just much better at this than I am. So I just, look, we'll do it this week. I'm sure that I will once again take the baton next week, but I thought you were so good last week, and I know that you had hundreds of messages in saying they wanted you to carry on. So I think we need to give the fans what they want.
Ridiculous, ridiculous, but okay, we shall do. There's a couple of these as well that would have been good for you to read out, but it's fine. We shall get cracking. In the Premier League, Robert Sanchez 2-2, Quvin Kelleher 1-1, Dean Henderson, man of, Andre Onana, Nana Nana, Weyeo, he's a keeper, Anthony Patterson, all cheer on the weir, Ian Melier, shutout sacking, Michael Cooper, made to be a blade, Alex Palmer, born to be a baggy, Freddie Woodman in Preston, Ainsley Pears, fares fair. Into League One, Joe Whitworth, growing up with the Grecians, Zach Zsikok, first since September 2020, Sam Tickle, 3-4, Bailey Peacock, Farrell, tally doubled. And into League Two, Paul Farman kicking it, Sam Walker running it, Owen Goodman hat-trick, Matt Macy alliterative, Philip Marshall hat-trick mark two, Jake Eastwood on the board, Glenn Morris 75%, Tommy Simkin team clean, and Harry Lewis manager blank bounce.
There you go. I mean, look, you're putting in a claim to do it every single week now. It's so smooth.
A quick table for you, because we do have a new leader, although there is a slight technicality in this, but who cares about technicalities when it comes to clean sheet clubs? So we've got a number of goalkeepers on four. We have three with four in seven, Will Mannion, Arthur Okonkwo and Philip Marshall. We have four with four in six, Ian Melier, Alex Palmer, Anthony Patterson and Owen Goodman. But leading the pack with four in five is Barrow's Paul Farman.
Wow.
The reason it's five is because the stats technically aren't factoring in the game where he was sent off, although he did play 40 plus minutes in that game. So, you know, a technicality, but we'll let him have it for now.
Yeah, we'll take that. I mean, if I was in that position, I would 100% take the clean sheet.
Good stuff. Okay, Richard, you are staring at me quite intently. It's time for you to go. So we will finish the podcast here, but we have GKs on their way coming up this week, don't we?
We do. We've made a promise. We have made a promise that will happen this week.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, keepers
away.